Welcome to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Sunday, September 5th, 2021. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. Let's take a look at some of our front page stories. How are North Iowa businesses adjusting to labor shortages? Labor Day is a day meant to celebrate and honor labor workers across the U.S., but for plenty of local businesses, those workers are becoming increasingly hard to come by. The other place, a restaurant located in Clear Lake off Highway 18, has had to make dramatic changes to how they do business because they are lacking enough employees to run at full capacity. We have a reduced menu, reduced seating, sections closed off, closed down early, and sometimes even shut down entirely, said owner Brian Hagenow. If you had told me I would be shutting down every so often, I would have laughed last year. We've never had a huge problem like this. It's not just the other place that has had this struggle. Businesses across North Iowa and the United States are struggling to bring in new staff and meet the demands of running a full-time business. Kelly Ziplich, the manager of K&B Emporium in Clear Lake, said that the lack of staff has caused some significant issues. We had to temporarily close our fine dining section. We're having some issues, for sure. This sentiment was shared by Larry Sonolath, the owner of Pad Thai Express in Mason City. Sonolath, who is also the head chef of Pad Thai Express, has had to work longer hours because he can't find part-time employees to cover night shifts. It's not hard, but it's not easy either, Sonolath said. We can't find people to work the late hour. This problem isn't one held by just Iowa, but a problem across the United States. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, there were 10.1 million job openings across the U.S. on the final business day of June this year. North Iowans are looking for different ways to combat this. K&B Emporium is raising the wages of current employees in hopes that they won't leave, while also advertising heavily for positions. We have advertising displays in the store, put out Facebook posts, spread through word of mouth, Ziplich said. We've been trying a lot. Advertising has been a big part of Hagenow's process as well, but his restaurant has seen different results recently. While still down about a few employees, something Hagenow is doing is working, as he recently was able to hire around 15 new employees in the last 2 weeks. I have no idea, Hagenow said when asked how he was able to bring in so many new employees. Maybe because they were all waiting to start after Labor Day. I really don't know. The reason why it's become such a struggle to hire new employees is a mystery to some business owners. I couldn't tell you why it's so hard, Sonolath said. Others believe that unemployment money given out by the government is playing a part in the lack of employees. Everyone wants to be paid to stay at home, said Ziplich. Nobody wants to work anymore. Hagenow pushed back on the idea that federal unemployment benefits were the cause of the labor shortage issues being suffered across North Iowa. I know a lot of people say it's because they're getting free money, but I don't know if that's the big issue, Hagenow said, especially since the governor stopped all of that, and it's still taking this long for people to come out and find jobs. Iowa Republican Governor Kim Reynolds ended the pandemic federal employment benefits for Iowans back on June 13th. While things have been difficult for these businesses and many more in North Iowa, Sonolath said he had optimism about the situation. It just takes teamwork, he said. We'll be okay. Anderson, Mason City needs worker. Help wanted. From the corner convenience store to Fortune 500 employers, everyone in our service area needs workers. Our need for skilled workers was validated by research conducted to formulate our strategic plan. An outside consultant, TIP Strategies, made demographic and economic assessments. They compiled quantitative data and made comparisons to labor-shed, state, and national data. Anecdotal findings were gathered from site visits, interviews, focus groups, and surveys. The Mason City Chamber of Commerce works with its economic development partners to address workforce attraction and retention from every angle. Richard Florida and other researchers have proven time and again that placemaking and livability matter to employees. For years, Mason City thought of itself as a music town. After all, native son Meredith Willson memorialized his hometown as River City in his Broadway musical, The Music Man. More recently, thanks in part to the reopening of the Frank Lloyd Wright-designed Park Inn Hotel and the world's largest collection of Prairie School architecture, Mason City began to capitalize on its growing reputation as an architectural destination. The Chamber has taken on numerous placemaking initiatives in the past few years to build on our brand and promote our authentic community assets as a workforce strategy. The Downtown Sculpture Program, murals, and utility box covers are a few examples. But there's still trouble in River City, with a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for population. Our population is aging and declining. The statistics are daunting. The current county unemployment rate is 3.2%, up only slightly from pre-pandemic rate of 2.4%. And 40.3% of our workforce is age 55 to 64. We need to attract and retain a younger workforce. The Chamber's Community Concierge Service complements the traditional recruitment efforts underway by business and industry. The Community Concierge Program is about selling our quality of life to the workers we need to drive the local economy and maintain our quality of life. Public relations and community marketing is at the heart of our wheelhouse. We provide high-touch wraparound services to new employees and their families. Our network enables us to connect workers and families to a wide array of service providers. Our recruitment research revealed that high-value workers gravitate to communities that provide a desired balance between professional and personal activities. Recruits with a strong affiliation to rural settings are more likely to be attracted to a smaller community. The more involvement the spouse or life partner has in the recruitment process, the better chance the recruit will commit. In addition, we found and we utilize advanced public relations and marketing techniques, including individually customized video and digital content development, specialized training in all aspects of recruitment, and retention to exceed expectations, including hotel welcome baskets and customized community tours. Community data, including cost of living and compensation package comparison tools. Our experience as conveners and connectors. Our membership provides access to business contacts and service organizations, schools, daycares, and etc. Some of our greatest successes to date are due to our ability to connect trailing spouses to meaningful employment opportunities. Steelhead Wind responds to silence on wind project in Franklin County. The Wild Rose Wind Project is a proposed wind farm in Franklin County, which is supposed to be 15,000 acres and was allegedly slated for a 2023 completion. However, Steelhead Wind LLC and its parent company Vestas American Wind Technology had gone silent on those who had signed easements to host wind turbines on their property. One person, Loretta Jansen, had previously expressed her frustration with the lack of communication on the project, having not heard from either Steelhead or Vestas since October of last year. "I keep telling them I won't live forever," Jansen joked. "I want to see this done." After the publication of a previous story, the Globe Gazette made contact with Vestas marketing and communications specialist Michelle Bardini. Bardini confirmed in her email to the Globe Gazette that the Wild Rose Wind Project is still in development and is now slated for a completion date of 2025. Steelhead Americas, Vestas development arm in North America, is actively developing the Wild Rose Wind Project in Franklin County, Iowa. We have several active leases within the county and are continuing to speak with landowners and community members to gauge interest. Jansen was happy to hear the project is still in the works, but disappointed with another delay in its completion. "That's good news," Jansen said when told of Vesta's response. "Just wish it was a bit sooner, though." In the same email, Bardini also gave some additional details, claiming that Wild Rose will create 200 megawatts of power capable of powering over 90,000 U.S. homes. Franklin County Supervisor Gary McVicker said he still hasn't heard from anyone involved in the Wild Rose Wind Project and that they still have yet to reach out to Franklin County's Zoning Department. The Future Is Now campaign surpasses $500,000 mark. Paul and Marcia Gordon moved to Mason City in 1976. They've been a part of the community for nearly 50 years now and raised two children in the Mason City Community School District. The couple is proud to call North Iowa home. So when they heard about Mason City High School expanding its athletic facilities, they knew they wanted to help out. Mason City has been a great place for us to live, and we're trying to support this kind of endeavor as much as we can, Paul said. The Future Is Now fundraising campaign was created to support the expansion project, which will feature a new swimming pool area, field house, and strength conditioning area. The Gordons decided to help by way of donating to the fundraiser. Their recent donations put the campaign's total running dollar amount over $500,000. I think we just thought it was very important to give, Marcia said. Our daughter was a swimmer, and even though we will not have children coming through here, or grandchildren, we still think this is good for our community. According to the Future Is Now campaign head Phil Johnson, the goal was to reach $750,000. With the running total currently over $500,000, the fundraiser isn't far off its goal. Construction workers are hard at work, and their work can already be seen at the high school. The anticipated project completion date is set for July 1, 2022. According to Johnson, anyone wishing to contribute to the Future Is Now campaign can do so by going online to mohawksfuture.org or by picking up a brochure or contribution form at Hy-Vee East, Hy-Vee West, Decker Sports, North Iowa Golf, or Wealth Partners. Reach Johnson at 641-423-7070. Mason City teacher gains experience, helps wildlife through an externship. Helping turtles and protecting Iowa's wildlife was all in a day's work for one Mason City educator. Mason City High School science teacher Emily Naninga participated this past summer in the Iowa STEM Teacher Externship Program, working with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, DNR. For 13 years, the Iowa Governor's STEM Advisory Council has matched teachers from across the state with local STEM workplaces through the externship program. This year, 66 Iowa teachers were matched to workplaces. Naninga received an email about the program requesting applications from teachers. She put in an application that specifically asked to be partnered with the Iowa DNR since she teaches courses involving environmental sciences. One of our former teachers had participated in the program and she really recommended taking part in it, said Naninga. The program aims to help Iowa educators bring additional experience to their classrooms by providing the opportunity to work side by side with industry professionals. Teachers can take the experiences they have learned and apply them to their curriculum. By matching teachers' skills and abilities to the goals of extern hosts, we've found a tremendous return on the investment of time and effort put into the externship for both the teachers and hosts, said Jason Lang, program manager of the STEM Teacher Externship Program. The externships were for 6 weeks, starting in June, with participants in a variety of STEM fields. While teachers learn how to show students the link between state academic standards and available jobs and needed skills, extern hosts find the help they need to complete significant projects that bring value to the organization. The externship placed Naninga with the Iowa DNR to work on projects that help Iowa wildlife. She mainly worked on two big projects during her externship, along with helping with occasional maintenance. For one project, Naninga captured, tagged, and tracked Blanding's turtles. The benefit of this project is to provide information that will be used to guide future wildlife habitat management. Tagging and tracking the turtles was meant to help with preventing the species from going extinct, said Nanenga. One of the best moments came from tagging the Blandings turtles early in the externship, according to Nanenga. She said the Iowa DNR was lucky to find a turtle a day, but when she went out with them, they found two. The excitement that the Iowa DNR had that day inspired Nanenga. The best part was honestly all the excitement from the DNR and how invested they were in the project. Nanenga's second project was a wildlife habitat management project for waterfowl that targets marsh and wetland areas using grazing of various livestock to manage unfavorable plant life in hopes of encouraging growth of desired plant life. This project aimed to help control local species using natural management and promote positive interactions between private farmers and the DNR. Nanenga said she is very grateful to the Iowa DNR for taking time out of their schedule and teaching her for 6 weeks. There has been great success in communicating the critical role of STEM in the workplace to our future workforce by creating these partnerships between teachers and businesses. Nanenga said the externship has helped her bring real-world experience to the classroom and add a personal side to lessons. My biggest takeaway is the way I will approach the material. It will be less textbook and looking more of a natural way, then bring in the textbook, said Nanenga. The program has been partly funded by grants from the National Science Foundation, the Iowa Economic Development Authority, the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, and Google, along with cost share investments by Iowa business and industry partners. This year's contributions from workplace hosts totals approximately $90,000 in addition to the STEM Council's investment. Michelle Sprout Murray, who is a writer who lives in Mason City, writes this today. Advice from other people's grandmas is good enough for me. I've had two things on my mind lately, although they seem unrelated at first. I think my conundrum came in a duo to help me solve the problem. The first is a story about life advice from someone else's grandma. I haven't had grandparents around since I was in 10th grade, so I tend to listen to sage advice shared by people who are lucky enough to have known their grandparents longer than I did. The creative designer of an activewear company that I represent spoke at a convention the other day, and like around 80,000 others, I chose to virtually attend. She shared the story of how she lost her grandmother very recently and started to cry while on stage, of course endearing her even more to her listeners as we empathized. Her story wasn't about how her grandma died, but rather about how she lived. Being close to her and her only granddaughter for years until Moore came into the picture, this speaker told us how she used to go shopping for hours and hours with her beloved grandma. The two of them tried on clothes in store after store, finding the perfect outfit, accessories, and shoes. Her grandma's advice back in the day was this: if there's something you want, you get it. She stressed never waiting for something because you just don't know if the opportunity is going to be there tomorrow. This heartfelt speaker went on to say that she thought her grandma's advice was about buying clothes. But as she grew older, she realized that the advice pertains to almost anything. None of us know how long we have on this earth. What are we waiting for? If we want a new outfit, a new job, a new perspective, why not just go out and get it now? I think I would have liked her grandma. Great advice and a great shopping partner are two attributes I certainly would have appreciated had I been blessed with more years with my grandmothers. I have a list a mile long of things I want to accomplish before I leave this earth. And like so many other people, so many of those items on my list have yet to be attempted, let alone crossed off. What am I waiting for? The perfect time, the perfect place, the perfect mindset. We all know that trifecta is never going to happen, so why wait for perfect? Which leads me to the second thing on my mind. It's not as earth-shattering or life-changing as the aha moment I had when listening to the clothing designer speak a couple of days ago. ever think about that again once I stop thinking about it this time. It's definitely something I will see a few times each day, and therefore ranks higher than most people in my life. I'm having issues with deciding what color doors I'd like to order for our house. There, I've said it. And seeing it in print makes me look a bit petty and indecisive. But readers, you know me pretty well, and I feel safe in telling you my innermost turmoil of the hour. Do I go with red velvet, the color that has always caught my eye since I was young, when Red Door by Elizabeth Arden was a coveted scent? Or do I go with something more neutral and safe? What says more about the people inside the house than the color of their doors? I remember house hunting with my husband years ago, and we adored a multi-level home that we affectionately called Green Door. It was easier than remembering the address and spouting that off in conversation. I wonder if the Green Door people are moving somewhere equally as awesome, I'd ponder aloud to my husband. We could be the new Green Door people. Green Door is a great house, but I don't think we're ready to move yet, was his answer. He was right. Some other lucky people moved into Green Door. Sadder than the day when we saw the sold sign in the yard was the day when we observed that the new owners had replaced the Green Door. It was like removing the delectable coconut pecan frosting off a German chocolate cake. The remainder was still great, but just not as special. I'm taking the advice of someone else's grandma along with my childhood dream of having a red door. Life's too short to have a nondescript door. I want the FedEx guy to know who he's dealing with as he sets my packages outside my red door. I want to feel giddy as I open my red door after a long day and night of work. I want to be the person whose personality matches her door. Yes, there's no time like the present to get what I want. The sky's the limit on the rest of my bucket list, because soon I will be living the life as a red door owner. Here's a letter to the editor. This one's written by Pat Ropella of Mason City. Pat writes, "How many more articles are we going to read, as well as those in media, shaming those who've chosen not to get the COVID vaccine for themselves or for their children over 12 years old? Rewriting history is one thing, but trying to befuddle my short-term memory is insulting. I remember Kamala Harris, in one of the Democratic pre-election debates last year, that she did not trust the Trump vaccine and would not take it if it was touted by the former president. Then there were many others in the Democrat Party and mainstream media last year who continued to pour cold water on Operation Warp Speed and the efficacy of any vaccine developed by the Trump administration. What is the old adage about something coming back to bite you? I have no doubt in my mind that if President Trump was still in the White House, the Democrats and their pet labradoodles in the mainstream media would be front and center in dissuading people from getting the vaccine. Personally, I'm fully vaccinated, but let's leave getting vaccinated to each individual and for those not choosing to get vaccinated for their own reasons, which many have been documented. No shaming is needed." Now we look at John Skipper's Sunday opinion piece. John Skipper retired from the Globe Gazette on February 2018. After 52 years in newspapers, I always look forward to reading him every week. This week he writes, "The Value of a Second Look." Silly me, there is something to be said for taking a second look at circumstances in our lives. It can take all sorts of forms. Have you ever come across a book on your bookshelf that you read years ago and decided to look through it again? Chances are it rekindled the enjoyment you had the first time around, or you discovered things you had either forgotten or had totally missed the first time around. I have reread classics that I was required to read in college more than 50 years ago. There's a big difference between reading something because you had to and reading it because you want to. Second looks are often fulfilling. Many of my books would have no resale value because I'm an underliner. I constantly underline passages in books that I have found meaningful. Sometimes, when I come across a book I haven't looked at in years, it's fun to thumb through it and just read the pieces that I had previously underlined. Am I the only one who does this? I know a woman who never watches a movie more than once because she thinks it's a waste of time. Me, I like watching movies that I enjoy the first time around and even look forward to seeing memorable scenes again. Sometimes I can repeat the lines as they're being said. Go ahead, make my day. You had me at hello. Here's Johnny. Don't underestimate the value of a second look. I have had occasion recently to have some legal work done. When I received the completed documents, I read through them and later read through them again. I do the same thing with their insurance policies, but to tell the truth, I usually find it easier just to call the agent and have him explain all the mumbo-jumbo. Have you ever typed something, looked at it carefully on your computer screen, and then printed it out? Inevitably, you will find a typo on the printout that you didn't see on the screen. I don't know why that is. It just is. I learned that lesson from working for years with Jane Reynolds at the Globe Gazette, the best copy editor I ever had in 50 years of journalism. Have you ever changed your opinion about someone upon meeting them for a second time? I have. Never underestimate the value of a second look. In the spring of 1967, I worked at a newspaper in Aurora, Illinois, and participated in a company-sponsored bowling tournament, intended as just a fun gathering for employees outside the workplace. One of the people bowling that day was a young woman who worked in the circulation department. I didn't even know her name. The next week, at work, I decided to give her a second look. And this year, we would have celebrated our 54th wedding anniversary. Well, we've reached the halfway point, and you're listening to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Sunday, September 5th, 2021. On IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Keith Darrell Anderson, January 31, 1940 to July 15. Keith Darrell Anderson of Reno, Nevada, passed away on July 15. He received hospice care through Circle of Life. Keith was born January 31, 1940, to Lloyd and Lorraine Johnson Anderson in Osage, Iowa. He spent his early years in Carpenter, Iowa. He was the oldest of three boys. His father passed away when Keith was only 11 years old. He lived in many small towns in those early years, as his mom was a country school teacher. The family finally settled in Rock Falls, Iowa, after Lorraine remarried. Keith graduated from Rock Falls High School in 1958 and then attended Mason City Junior College in Mason City from 1958 to 1960. In 1961, he joined the U.S. Army and was part of the 25th Infantry Division stationed at Schofield Barracks in Hawaii. When he left the Army, he attended the University of Iowa and then married Linda Studer in January 1972. They made their home in Mason City. One daughter was born to this union, Amelia Ray. Keith loved his family, but his next love was baseball. He had started playing at the age of 11 for Little League and throughout high school. He continued after joining the Army, where he pitched for the Dragons, his unit's ball team. He continued playing softball in Mason City for many different teams, including Decker Sporting Goods and the Rose Bowl. Keith held various jobs around the area, but retired when he was diagnosed with myasthenia gravis at the Iowa City VA Medical Center. Keith was cremated at Walton's Funeral Home in Reno, Nevada. Burial will be at a later date. No service will be held at this time. Ronald L. Getman, October 5, 1937 to September 2nd. Ronald L. Getman of Mason City passed away Thursday, September 2nd at the Muse Norris Hospice Inpatient Unit. Memorial services will be held at 2 p.m. Tuesday, September 7th at Wesley United Methodist Church, with Pastor Craig Luttrell officiating. Visitation will be held from 1 p.m. until time of services Tuesday at the church. Ron was born October 5, 1937, the son of George and Pearl Shaner Getman in Mason City. Ron graduated from Mason City High School in 1955 and served in the U.S. Army from 1960 to 62. He married Joan Thomason on December 22, 1990, in Mason City. The couple were longtime members of Wesley United Methodist Church. They enjoyed completing projects together, Joan as the designer and Ron as the builder. They also looked forward to trips to the casino, antique stores, and travel. Ron loved hunting, fishing, and watching sports, especially the Twins, Vikings, Hawkeyes, and Bills. Ron was a gearhead, carpenter, and jack of all trades, willing to fix anything for anybody, whether asked to or not, and beloved for his generosity. He was given the nickname Dauber while working at Mercy Medical Center in the maintenance department, and the name stuck, as Ron was the main painter. And the joke was, when he got done painting all the rooms, it was time to start over. Ron retired from Mercy in 2002. Arrangements are with Major Erickson Funeral Home and Crematory in Mason City. Lothar Meyer, age 71, of Clear Lake, passed away September 3rd at Mercy One North Iowa Medical Center in Mason City. Arrangements are pending at this time. Ward Van Slyke Colonial Chapel in Clear Lake is in charge of arrangements. Barbara Ann Medlin, August 8, 1946 to September 3rd. Barbara Ann Medlin of Mason City peacefully passed to her heavenly eternal home on Friday, September 3rd at Mercy One North Iowa Hospice. Visitation will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. on Tuesday, September 7th at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel in Mason City. Everyone is welcome to attend the graveside service at 11 a.m. Wednesday, September 8th at Elmwood St. Joseph Cemetery in Mason City. Those wishing to attend may meet at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel at 10:30 a.m. to process to the cemetery together. A gathering following the service will be held at the All Vets Center in Mason City. In lieu of flowers, the family will be making memorial contributions to Hospice of North Iowa, the All Vets Center, and Gift of Life Transplant House in Rochester, Minnesota. Barbara was born on August 8, 1946, to Lawrence and Ruth Albrecht Holatz. She graduated from St. Ansgar High School's class of 1964. And then on October 16, 1964, Barbara married James L. Medlin in St. Ansgar. The couple began their life in Mason City. In 1976, Barbara began working for the Mason City School District. It didn't take long for her to work her way up to head baker with Kathy Borchardt. The two often made the awesome cinnamon rolls that went with chili or tacos on Wednesdays, as well as the chocolate brownies and cookies. Barbara retired in 2012 and began to do more of the things she loved to do on her time off: playing 500, reading, listening to the classic country music, and watching westerns with her husband Jim are just a few of the examples of what Barbara enjoyed outside of baking. And cleaning. Most people don't enjoy cleaning, but it was a way for Barbara to relax while pestering her kids. Family was what brought Barbara the most joy in the world. She was there for them unconditionally. Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel is in charge of arrangements. Deanna Lou Kruckenberg, August 31st 2021 was her date of passing. Funeral services for Deanna L. Kruckenberg, age 80, of Mason City, will be 11 a.m. on Friday, September 10th, at St. Peter Lutheran Church in Rockwell, with Reverend Jane Harris officiating. Burial will be at a later date. Visitation is at St. Peter Lutheran Church in Rockwell on Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m. and will continue at the church 1 hour prior to services on Friday. Deanna was born in Mason City, the daughter of Donald and Mabel Nicolette Ohlert, and passed away on August 31st at the Country Meadow Place in Mason City. She received her education in country school, graduating from Rockwell High School, and attended Hamilton Business College. Deanna was united in marriage to Larry Kruckenberg on June 12, 1960, at Zion St. John Lutheran Church in Sheffield. The couple was blessed with 2 children, Kurt and Candy. Deanna remained at home until the children were in high school, during which time she helped out on the farm while Larry was at work. Future employment included Sears, the North Iowa Credit Bureau, and the Cerro Gordo County Treasurer's Office, where she remained for 20 years. She was a member of the Rockwell Women's Club, WELCA, and the church choir. Deanna loved music and played the accordion. She enjoyed traveling anywhere with her family. After retirement, they enjoyed many memorable trips, especially to Alaska. Arrangements have been entrusted to Rhett's Funeral Home in Sheffield, Iowa. Lila Ethel Hall Kendall, March 30, 1926 to August 25th. Lila Ethel Hall Kendall went to be with Jesus on August 25th at the age of 95. She was preceded in death by her parents, Leonard T. and Mazzy Hall, her husband Eugene Kendall, daughter Patty Lynn, sisters Evelyn, Verlin, and Ruby, and 1 niece, Judy. Lila and Eugene were longtime residents of Mason City. They lived a short time near Manly, Iowa, and for the past 9 years, Lila lived in Boscobel, Wisconsin. She enjoyed knitting, gardening, quilting, baking cookies, and visiting with her grandchildren. There will be a family graveside service at Memorial Park Cemetery on Highway 18 between Mason City and Clear Lake on October 9th at 1 p.m. Patricia Ann Betts, June 16, 1949 to September 2nd. Pat Ann Hackbart Betts passed away on Thursday, September 2nd at Mercy Hospital in Mason City. She was born June 16, 1949 in Osage, Iowa, to Melvin and Emma Virginia Horton Hackbart. Pat graduated from Osage High School in 1968. She met and fell in love with Kay Betts, and they were united in marriage on October 5, 1969. They were blessed with 2 children, Robert and Tanya. In the early years of their marriage, they lived in Forest City and several other small towns in Iowa due to Kay's job with the railroad. Kay then started working for the Cunty and McGregor's Furniture, and they settled permanently in Mason City. Pat graduated from Hamilton Business College with top honors in 1982 while raising her family. Pat worked for Calypto Printing Company, Shopco, from the time the Mason City store opened in 1985 until her retirement in 2016. During that time, she also was a Sunday school teacher at Wesley United Methodist Church. In retirement, Pat cherished her time, going to her grandchildren's many events. She was very proud of them. Pat and Kay treasured their time with their family. Pat loved her family and was happiest when she was spending time with them. Arrangements are with Major Erickson Funeral Home and Crematory in Mason City. And that concludes today's obituaries. Here's a story about Lime Creek Nature Center. Late Summer Wreck Experiences Close to Home by Bailey Dolman, who was a conservation education intern at the Lime Creek Nature Center. Late summer is a great time to get outdoors and enjoy recreational activities. There are endless amounts of recreational opportunities right here in Cerro Gordo County for all ages and abilities, whether it be a hike, a picnic, or an afternoon of fishing. Some great activities to enjoy before summer fades include kayaking, fishing, hiking, and biking. Other popular activities include nature photography, birding, or simply nature watching. This is just a short list of all the opportunities to get outdoors and enjoy late summer days. If you're wondering where to go, Cerro Gordo County Conservation manages 35 natural areas that provide a wide variety of those recreational opportunities. These natural areas contain trails, lakes, ponds, wildlife viewing areas, rivers, and so much more. These areas give access to many recreational activities such as camping, canoeing, and kayaking, fishing, prairie viewing, hiking, biking, and even geocaching. If interested in fishing, Cerro Gordo County has many areas with rivers, lakes, and ponds. There are areas to fish on both the Winnebago River and the Shell Rock River. Along the Winnebago River, a few areas to fish include Coon Wildlife Area, Lime Creek Conservation Area, Winnebago Oxbow, and Spring Creek Preserve. Along the Shell Rock River, Wilkinson Pioneer Park and the Shell Rock River Greenbelt provide a large area of river access for fishing. When fishing these two rivers, there are many common species of fish that are caught. These species include channel catfish, smallmouth bass, northern pike, walleye, white sucker, common carp, yellow bullhead, and black bullhead. In addition to fishing the rivers, there are also many areas that offer fishing in a lake or pond. Blair Meadows Preserve contains a 0.65-acre pond that is only accessible from foot. Bluebill Wildlife Area contains a 40-acre lake. This lake features both shore and boat fishing. Clark Lake is an 18-area lake located on the east side of the Mike Sack Wildlife Area. Fin and Feather Lake, a 10-acre lake, is on the west side of the Mike Sack Wildlife Area. While fishing in ponds and lakes, some common species of fish to catch include largemouth bass, bluegill, green sunfish, and channel catfish. Canoeing and kayaking is a great way to enjoy the outdoors as well. While floating a river or lake, the opportunities to see wildlife are endless. While it may take some practice to be comfortable canoeing or kayaking, it can be a rewarding experience. There are opportunities to canoe and kayak both the Winnebago and Shell Rock River, as well as many of the lakes within the county areas. A few places to access the Winnebago River include Coon Wildlife Area, Winnebago Oxbow Wildlife Area, Avery Dale Access, and Goranson Access. A few places to access the Shell Rock River include Strand Park, Wilkinson Park, and Shell Rock River Greenbelt and Preserve. Typically, most paddlers travel around 2 to 3 miles per hour on a normal river outing, so that can help when planning your trip. There are also many areas to canoe or kayak the ponds and marshes within the county's area. Mallard Marsh, Zirbel Slough, and the Bluebill Wildlife Area are great lakes and marshes to float and view a variety of habitats and wildlife. Another great recreational experience is camping. Cerro Gordo County Conservation has many areas where camping is allowed. There are two primitive campsites at Lime Creek Nature Area. These sites can be rented out through Lime Creek Nature Center. Primitive camping is also allowed at Shell Rock River Greenbelt and Preserve. Cerro Gordo County Conservation also manages 3 modern campgrounds, Ingebrigtsen Park, Lynn Grove Park, and Wilkinson Pioneer Park. Cerro Gordo County Conservation has many trails throughout the county. These trails can be used for a variety of things, including hiking, biking, and horseback riding. The trails can range from gravel, mowed, paved, and are in a variety of different habitats. These provide a fun way to explore the county and are great places to view wildlife, birds, and insects. Late summer is a great time to get outdoors and enjoy recreational activities. While this is just a short list of all the opportunities available, there are so many activities to do here in Cerro Gordo County. Whether it is an activity you have done before or trying something new, recreational activities provide a great experience outdoors. If you would like more information about the recreational opportunities that Cerro Gordo County Conservation has to offer, please visit cgcounty.org to learn more about all of our areas and all of the recreational opportunities that are close to home. Small game hunters could enjoy banner year during 2021. Iowa's small game hunting season are just around the corner. Cottontail rabbits, fox, squirrels, and gray squirrels became legal game September 4th. Pheasant hunting begins with a two-day youth hunt on October 20th, 3rd, and 24th, followed by the regular season, which runs from October 30th through January 10th. The best indicator of what this year's seasons will bring come from the data collected along the DNR's annual roadside game surveys. Beginning in early August, wildlife biologists survey statewide upland game populations by tabulating the number of pheasants, gray partridge, bobwhite quail, cottontail rabbits, and other small game species sighted while driving 218 designated 30-mile roadside routes. Traveling the same backroad trail since 1962, the synchronized routes are run on mornings when calm winds and heavy dew bring rabbits and game birds into rural roadsides to dry off. Although the results of this year's surveys won't be posted for a couple of weeks yet, early indications suggest that Iowa's small game enthusiasts could enjoy a banner season during 2021. Pheasant populations will draw the most attention, of course. For ringneck hunters, good news is in the offing. Last year's relatively mild winter ended with good survival and plenty of hen pheasants occupying the spring landscape. The April, May, June nesting season was unusually dry, a condition that generally favors ground nesting wildlife. As summer wanes, the results of this year's nesting effort have become increasingly evident. Wildlife biologists, rural mail carriers, farmers, and other early risers are beginning to see pheasants, and lots of them. Last year, Iowa ringneck populations enjoyed an 18% increase over 2019, leading to a 2020 harvest of 300,000 roosters, the highest in a decade. We'll hopefully see more of the same during 2021. Here's some sports stories. We'll come right at you. West Hancock football sticks to recipe for success by Gunnar Davis. Turn on the tape of the West Hancock football team's offense in the 1970s, and then compare it to the film of the Eagles' 32-8 Class A District 2 win over Newman Catholic on Friday night in Mason City. You probably won't see much difference. We have the same game plan that we do offensively, West Hancock head coach Mark Sanger said. We'll add a few wrinkles here and there, just because you get to a point where people see it so much that they start to figure out what you're trying to do. But you don't have to change it if it continues to work. And for the Eagles, it definitely works. Despite new faces up front and players in new roles in the backfield, the Eagles rushed for 271 yards in a 28-7 win over Garner Hayfield Ventura in Week 1, and 310 rushing yards in their win over Newman Catholic. It's a bulldozer offense, senior fullback Matthew Francis said. We're going to come right at you. And if you're not going to respect the fullback and two halfbacks, then it's going to be a rough game, will come right at you. Francis has rushed for 292 yards and 6 touchdowns in just 2 games of action so far this season. Up to this point, it looks like Francis is the next great fullback in a West Ham offense that featured Cole Kelly in the role in 2020 and Tate Hagen during the 2019 championship run. Keep going back year after year, and you'll see many of the program's best doing exactly what Hagen, Kelly, and now Francis have done. "It's honestly an honor," Francis said. "Our offense is a lot of power. It's a lot on the fullback, and we've had some great fullbacks. Honestly, it's an honor for me. It's a big step up, but I love to do it." Francis rushed for 642 yards and 7 touchdowns in the halfback role a season ago. Kane Zuehl also rushed for 341 yards and 4 touchdowns in his junior year. Zuehl looks like he settled back into the halfback role nicely through 2 games. He's averaging 6.5 yards a carry and has recorded 142 yards. Like Francis, he agrees that West Hancock Smith-Schmell style of offense suits the town of Brent well. "We've been running it since as long as I can remember," Zuehl said. "If it ain't broke, don't fix it." The Eagles fell 1 game short of making it to the state semifinals at the UNI Dome a year ago and have hopes of getting back there for a 2nd time in 3 seasons. However, West Hancock will need to get through a challenging gauntlet of district opponents, including the likes of St. Ansgar and Lake Mills. Friday's win over Newman Catholic was the perfect confidence booster. "I think a quality team like that, to get a big win under our belt, it does nothing but give our guys confidence moving forward," Sanger said. Football roundup. Mason City football struggles at Spencer. At senior running back, Branson Peters' 2-yard touchdown run helped the Mason City football team jump out to an 8-0 lead early on Friday night in Spencer. But that would be the only score of the night for the Mohawks. The Tigers went on to score 41 unanswered points and roll through the Mohawks in a 41-8 rout in non-district play. Spencer tied things up at 8 points apiece after 1 quarter of play and scored 10 more points in the 2nd quarter to make the score 18-8 at halftime. Again, the Tigers extended their lead in both the 3rd quarter and the 4th quarter. The Mohawks struggled to get things going offensively and ended the game without any points scored in the final 3 quarters. Junior quarterback Cale Hobart threw for 102 yards and an interception, while junior Malachi Johnson was the leading rusher with 8 carries for 29 yards. Senior Isaiah Washington led the Mohawks with 4 catches for 60 yards. The Mohawks are now 0-2 on the season and will play Charles City next Friday in Mason City. Here are some other scores. Algona 47, Clear Lake 23, St. Ansgar 67, West Fork 0, Hampton Dumont Cal 17, Iowa Falls Alden 14, Applington Parkersburg 26, Osage 14, Lake Mills 20, Central Springs 0, Spirit Lake 49, Forest City 0, Northwood Kensett 32, Harris Lake Park 29, Charles City 14, New Hampton 8, Humboldt 41, Garner Hayfield Ventura 14, Rockford 52, Clarksville 32, Tripoli 46, Riceville 24, and finally Bishop Garrigan 20, North Iowa 16. Gunnar Davis writes, "North Iowa, a perfect example of how continuity in coaching leads to success. I haven't been shy in the past about how one of my favorite things to do as a sports reporter is to have a conversation with a player or coach who generally wants to talk with me. Oftentimes, I talk with an athlete or a coach that looks for the perfect thing to say. Sometimes I get coach speak. Other times, I can see the nerves reflect in their answers, and I don't blame them. I used to feel the same way conducting the interviews. But every so often, I'll get a chance to talk for a long time with a coach or player about all sorts of topics, not just sports. During the preseason, I had one of those type of conversations with Lake Mills head volleyball coach, Jim Bomer. I asked Bomer, a successful coach and athletic director at Lake Mills for over 3 decades, about why his program remains so consistent despite player turnover due to graduation. His answer, continuity in coaching. Bomer went on to give credit to some of the best coaches and programs in the North Iowa area before our conversation came to end. I left the Bulldogs gym that day really thinking about his answer, and the more I thought about it, the more it made sense. Look around North Iowa. It's on display here. At West Hancock, Bob Sanger led the program for 5 decades and was part of 3 state championship teams. His son Mark has since led the program for the past season. The Eagles haven't missed a beat and are again expected to compete for a district title this fall. From Bob to Mark, I said all along that when Bob is done coaching football, Mark is in town, Bomer said. You think there's going to be anything else that's going to change? Elsewhere, Dave Capitani has led the Northwood Kensett football team to the state playoffs 18 different times during his 3 decades leading the program. Drew Clevenger has done it 15 times, including a state title, and 2 decades at St. Ansgar. Belinda Nelson led the Central Springs softball team for 20 years. This summer's trip to the state tournament was the Panthers' 7th straight. Kurt Claussen led the Mohawk girls basketball team to a state championship in 2016 and has recorded numerous playoff wins during his 14 seasons. The Newman Catholic baseball program transitioned from Troy Adams to Alex Bull in 2016. The streak of state baseball tournaments stayed alive and made its way all the way to 13 before finally ending. Bomer also mentioned rival coach Lacey Jerome, Forest City Volleyball, and also Brent Jennings, Osage Wrestling, Don Rossiker, Forest City Boys Basketball, and other coaches in the Lake Mills District as examples of coaches who have long and had long-term success. Well, everyone, we have reached the end of today's reading of the Mason City Globe-Gazette for Sunday, September 5th, 2021. I'm your volunteer reader, Amy B. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time.